It's a sunny evening at the Sheep River in Okotoks, Alberta. Clara Jade spent a lot of her childhood at this river. It was a getaway from everything else going on in her world. Okotoks is the largest town in Alberta, just south of Calgary. It's where Clara lived for the majority of her childhood, from ages 5 to 19. It's also where she experienced years of racism as a child of immigrants.
It was kind of difficult because it was just like, I was really young. I think I was 5 years old. So like during like the most like transformative years of my life, I had to deal with a lot of racism and kind of being isolated and feeling different than everybody else. So it really took a big toll on my mental health.
Clara's parents are originally from Mozambique, but fled to Kenya amid a war. When the fighting died down, Kenya gave refugees two options: go back to their war-torn home country or find another country to live in. So they moved to Canada. But it wasn't easy. Despite having successful careers back home, their experience didn't transfer over to Canada. So they started their own cleaning business. And as one of two black families in the town, Clara would get constant comments from her classmates: "Your mom is our maid." They always made her feel like the other. As an adult, Clara was diagnosed with PTSD from the racism she experienced in Okotoks. She now lives in Calgary and deals with the mental health impacts of being a black woman and a child of immigrants in a small town every day. Children of immigrants, first-generation Canadians, second-generation immigrants. In Canada, almost 3 in 10 children fall into this category, with that number expected to grow quickly over the next decade. The experience of being born in Canada to parents who gave up everything to immigrate here is complex and unique. It changes the way you see and navigate life here in Canada. It's an experience that everyone might not understand. And as a child of immigrants myself, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to make this series. I'm Karina Zapata, and you're listening to The Second Gen, a series focused on the stories of children of immigrants in Canada. This project is powered by Shaw and made possible with the Community Podcast Initiative on the traditional territories of the Blackfoot Confederacy and the people of the Treaty 7 region in southern Alberta. In this episode, we'll be focusing on how children of immigrants navigate their mental health, especially coming from communities who may not have believed in getting help for it, and parents who may have been too focused on surviving and making a living for themselves in Canada to focus on their own well-being. On a bench overlooking Sheep River, I spoke with Clara about what it was like growing up as a child of Mozambican parents who immigrated to Canada from Kenya, and how that took a toll on her mental health.
How does it feel being back here right now for you?
It's definitely different. I haven't been to Sheep River since I was probably like 13 years old. definitely different. I think I feel different now that I've been through therapy and stuff. I don't really have like negative emotions. I used to get like a pit in my stomach every time I drove through the town, and I don't really have that anymore, so that's good. But yeah.
And what was that like for you, kind of, you know, navigating living here and dealing with all that racism as you grew older and realized that your mental health was something that you needed support from and something that you needed help for?
I think it was tough. Things got better when I actually left school, and it was a tough decision for my parents to allow me to do that. I had been asking to go to therapy for very long, and it just isn't really part of our culture to do that, so they weren't willing to sign off on that, but they were willing to pull me out of school. So during that time, I was doing online school, and it was super hard, but I did get to focus on my mental health a little bit and just kind of seeing who I was without being in a place that I don't feel welcome every day. So that was great. And then as I got older and I was able to like leave the town because I got my license and things like that, I was able to meet more people that were like me that lived in Calgary. And I think that definitely helped a lot.
You mentioned that your parents didn't let you get therapy when you were younger. It's a part of your culture to kind of not be so open to talking about mental health and things like that. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, my parents are African. They're from Mozambique, and they didn't really grow up like hearing about mental health or worried about that at all. So it was kind of a new thing to them. Like, they would kind of hear about people who are like depressed and things like that, but they didn't really understand it. And sometimes even they would make like comments about people who like had mental illness. And I was just kind of, it wasn't a very open conversation that we were really having. So it kind of made me think a little bit differently of myself, because I'm like, well, why am I dealing with this? And now that I'm older, I know that they were probably dealing with some mental health struggles, but they didn't even know. But because our community just doesn't, we're very Christian, so that's, everything is like prayer and pray it away. So that's kind of the route that they always took.
Looking back at who you were when you lived in Okotoks, you know, as a child, and who you are now, how do you think you've changed?
I have definitely realized my self-worth more. I've learned to love myself and my skin and my culture, and those were things that I was often told to be embarrassed about. So now I'm more embracing of that, and I'm definitely more secure in myself, and I kind of feel like I have a place in the world, which I don't think I really felt like I did before.
Being a child of immigrants impacts everyone's mental health differently, and it's important to hear from others to better understand how. So, to delve more into this, we also connected remotely with Shanice Coombs, a child of Jamaican immigrants from Brantford, on the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg peoples, and Alonso Malgar, a child of El Salvadoran immigrants from Toronto, the traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabeg, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples.
Questions here. Clara, how often did your family talk about mental health growing up?
Almost never. If we did have that conversation, usually I was the one to bring it up because I struggled with my mental health. My older sister sometimes would bring it up, but from my parents, pretty much never.
Alonso, you mentioned that your parents are from El Salvador. Was it different for you? How often did your family talk about mental health growing up?
Very little. When I was first diagnosed with depression and generalized anxiety disorder, when I was like 12, it was very much a learning experience for like the whole family. It was, everyone was learning about it for the first time. So yeah, it was a lot of group therapy sessions, and it was tough. It was uncomfortable. Those first couple years, or at first, it was something definitely very unexpected for everyone, myself included.
Yeah, and what about you, Shanice?
I would say the same thing. It wasn't really a household conversation. I guess it's fair to say within my community like that, so I never really had that conversation.
Continuing with that, Shanice, you know, you mentioned that it's not really a thing in your community to talk about mental health. So how do you think that played a role in the way that, you know, you struggled with your mental health growing up?
I would say that I struggled with my mental health growing up in the sense that if it's not really something that we experience in our community, I don't necessarily understand that I even have a problem or something that I'm struggling with. So whatever emotions that I'm feeling or whatever I'm going through, it's like, oh, it's just another part of life. And you just have to push forward and try and live life. That's it. As opposed to, this is not necessarily something that you need to deal with like that. And you can get help so that things can get better.
What was that like for you when you reached a point where you were like, oh, I really need to, you know, talk about this with someone. I need to get support for my mental health.
So for me personally, it was really hard, especially admitting that you have, I guess, a quote unquote problem. It was really hard. And I guess there's some stigma with it where you don't really know who to ask for help or what way or what direction that you were going through. When I had to go get counseling, I was in university. So it's a lot of years that passed that I've been dealing with all this mental health. I didn't even know that that was a thing. So it's kind of like a big learning curve, and going through the whole process itself was a bit like, oh my God, what am I getting myself into? Am I ready for this? Do I want to do this? How is this going to help me? But I mean, in the end of it, it worked out in my favor, but it was a really big step, I'd say.
And going to you, Alonso, I think there's an extra barrier there as well, because you are a man. So how does being a male child of immigrants impact the way that you navigated your mental health growing up?
It was definitely a struggle on, you know, two levels. I'm facing, you know, the stigma of the masculine idea, or the idea that men shouldn't talk about their mental health, or it's a sign of weakness. You know, that's one level of stigma that I have to face. And then there's the other of, you know, I have very vivid memories of going out in public with my dad. And like, we went to the bank one time and he's trying to pay a bill, and he speaks in very broken English and has a very like distinct accent, and I can hear people in the line behind us like openly ridiculing him and like making fun of his accent. And so those two things combined really did just instill this belief that talking about anything, let alone mental health, is just not okay. Like, you just don't do it. Like, you're supposed to stay silent. Yeah, for the longest time, it was definitely a challenge to open up about it to other people. I was able to accept it for myself. Like, I was able to like accept, okay, I have issues, I need to work on them. But in terms of forming deep personal relationships with other people, where inevitably that stuff kind of has to be talked about, you know, it's a pretty big part of my life, I just was not able to do that. Because I had all this experience, or like all the stigma surrounding males don't talk about this. And then also, as a racialized individual, you just don't talk because you open yourself up to racial violence. It was, yeah, really hard for me to even begin to, you know, become comfortable talking about anything, let alone mental health.
Yeah, you know, racial violence is, I think, a big thing that many children of immigrants struggle with, especially when it comes to mental health. You know, it's one thing that impacts your mental health. And it, like you mentioned, it's also a thing where, you know, when you talk about it, it can put you at risk of racial violence. Clara, going to you, I know that's something that you struggled with. So how does being a Black woman in Canada and the racism that you faced growing up impact your mental health?
It's been incredibly hard. I'm kind of going to echo what Shanice was saying, because I didn't see a therapist either until I was about 18. I could go by myself. Every time I would bring it up with my parents, they felt like personally hurt by it. And when I was a kid, I didn't really understand why. They were always afraid of me going to talk about them or whatever it may be. In our culture, we just don't really talk about mental health. So when I was going to school and getting bullied, and you know, I would come home and cry to my parents, and you know, I'm sure now that I'm older, I can look back and say, okay, I was depressed, I had anxiety, I had PTSD, but I didn't actually get diagnosed till I was older. So I wasn't really sure how to navigate my mental health as a child. I always thought there was something wrong with me. I always thought I was weak because my parents would always say, like, well, you know, you're Black, you know, our entire like generation has just been dealing with struggle. You know, we've struggled coming here. We struggle back home in America. They're slaves. Like, that Black people just struggle. So you need to just pretty much toughen up. And I wasn't able to do that. So when I'm depressed, dealing with my mental health, I'm like, okay, there's something wrong with me. I guess I'm not really cut out for this, I guess. So that was really tough. And I think I carried that into adulthood. And after leaving school, because the racism was so bad, I was afraid to work in public spaces. I didn't want to work from home or work with children or whatever it would be. It was just really hard to be in those spaces because I'd be afraid of any type of racial violence that could occur.
To continue with you, Clara, you know, there's that aspect of the racism that you faced here, which was a big part of your life. But I think something that's notable is that your family also, you know, went through a lot. Your parents, you know, before they moved to Canada, they went through a lot to get here. So I guess knowing that, what was that like for you growing up, just knowing everything that they had been through?
It was tough. It was something that I didn't entirely understand. I think my parents actually didn't tell me about it until I was maybe like 10 years old and I came home crying after some kid called me the N-word. And I was like, why did we even come here? Like, why couldn't we have just stayed back home? Like, everybody looks like us there. And my parents are like, you have no idea why we came here. And they explained to me that at the time, the Portuguese were taking over Mozambique, so they couldn't live there. It was like just completely like full of war all over the country. So they moved to Kenya. And once the war kind of died down, although everything was destroyed, Kenya was like, okay, all the Mozambicans like have to go back home. So my parents were like, either we went back home to that and we had nothing. And, you know, there's the buildings are destroyed. Like, I've been to Mozambique recently and it's still, they're still recovering from that. Or they come to Canada, or I guess Australia was another option for them. And it was a lot. They left everything. Like, my dad had to come back at one point to look for my mom's mom because they had no idea where she was, if she was alive or dead. Or so I think that put some things into perspective for me. Although, yes, this is the struggle that I'm dealing with. There's like, the grass isn't always greener on the other side, I guess. So yeah, that was tough. And I think that it also kind of made me pick and choose my battles about what I would complain to my parents about when it came to mental health and stuff, because I'm like, okay, well, they had to have like some aspect of mental health struggle to be going through that and to be so young and going to a whole different country with two little kids. So again, another like coming back to me being like, oh, I'm weak, basically.
Shanice, is that something that you experienced as well? Was there anything in your childhood where, you know, you saw your parents struggling as well, or there were experiences that they faced that impacted you and your mental health?
I would say yes. I like, it's kind of terrible to say, but like, you know, for me, everybody who comes from back home, they have like some hard life story where they had to walk how many miles to go do this or this and this. Their relatives didn't get along, somebody was treated bad, whatever, like, you know. So I guess I resonate with Clara when she's saying the different mental health that even your parents or their grandparents or whatever was dealing with. And then you have to like come and you're dealing with this on your own side of things. And you don't know, like, well, I didn't experience that back home, but I'm experiencing this. And I think with my parents, that was a hard thing to explain to them, because I'm like, you guys grew up there and at least you had everybody who kind of looked like you. And I guess, like, you know, where Claire was like, you know, why didn't we just go back home? You definitely have those thoughts where, like, I would still rather deal with, I guess, whatever's going on back there than dealing with the other stuff here. Because when you're at home, the people who you can relate to the most don't understand your experience because they didn't grow up here. So they only, I guess, are experience it through work, and they come home and they don't have to deal with that. When I'm going to school and somebody says this or that to me, and I'm explaining to my mom or my dad, like, this is what's happening, they don't know what to say or how to, you know, just tell them to leave you alone or ignore it or however they're telling you that they think is the best way. And sometimes it's like it weighs on you because, like, you're going through this your whole life and you're just like, I'm just trying to live. Like, why is this a thing?
A theme I see here with you all, and something that I experienced myself as a child of immigrants when navigating mental health, is that often we feel like our mental health struggles aren't important enough or hard enough to be able to get support, because we see what our parents went through and we see, you know, that they were in that survival mode, that they went through so much and now they're here and they're doing well. So going to you, Clara, you mentioned that, you know, your parents had been through so much coming here. So do you feel like those stories that you heard from your parents kind of played into what we see as intergenerational trauma? And if so, how did that play a role in your mental health?
Absolutely. I think in my adult life, I have really equated my achievements to my self-worth, just because there's a lot of pressure on me. Although my parents were doing okay, I knew that I didn't have that, I wasn't the kid who had, like, you know, a bank account that was made for me when I was a child for college and things like that. Like, my parents didn't have a retirement fund. Like, we're their retirement plan. Their kids are their retirement plan. So I'm like, okay, so I have to get good grades. I have to, like, be the best. And that, like, having to leave school because of racism, I was like, okay, so whatever I do after this now, like, I have to make some money somehow to be able to retire my parents and almost thank them for everything that they've done for me, basically. So I think that although I struggled with depression and ADHD and anxiety, I was always like, at the end of the day, I was happy if I was doing well in whatever it was, whether it was work, whether it was school, as long as I was getting good grades, making good money, able to pay a bill for my parents, whatever it was, like, that's what mattered. And I would always think about that. And I had a therapist once say to me that you need to think about how you grew up and you were helping your parents with their business because English isn't their first language. They don't know how to use a computer till this day. So I do all their invoicing, all that. When everything moved online, I was doing that. And like translating and all of that stuff. And then taking care of my sister's kids, and our family's very like tight knit. So I would never really think about how a lot of people don't have to deal with that. And there's not a lot of pressure for them to have to actually like help their parents do day-to-day things because English isn't their first language. So definitely there was a big strain on my mental health when it came to like, how am I going to give my parents the life they deserve, just like they tried to do for me.
Alonso, the impact of intergenerational trauma on your mental health has been a big realization for you in the last year. Tell me more about what that journey has been like.
It's definitely been a byproduct, I suppose, of the pandemic and being, you know, stuck at home. And also, like, you know, I've lived in Toronto for the last 3 years. When the pandemic started, I was only living here for a year. My dad was still in Calgary, but it just felt like the distance was like so much more. I felt like we've been separated like so much longer. So it made me want to like reach out more to him and also have more in-depth conversations that extended beyond how's school going, it's good, you know. Yeah, it's been a journey in of itself for the last year or so of just having phone conversations with him and talking about what it was like for him immigrating to Canada, but then also asking, like, when I was going through my mental health journey, like, at the beginning, what was it like for him? What was it like for him to, you know, see his son go through his struggles? And, you know, how does that relate to what he's gone through? And like, really opening up the floor to just have him actually, like, express himself to me. Like, I mean, I guess in a sense, I'm his therapist, his happy, willing therapist.
Kind of going a little bit back to talking about intergenerational trauma, Shanice, intergenerational trauma wasn't something that you spoke much about in therapy. Can you tell me more about why that is?
Yeah, so I didn't speak much about the intergenerational trauma because I was lucky enough to have a therapist who came from the Caribbean. So a lot of the things that I was experiencing, I didn't have to go into context with. She was familiar. I could say, oh, this and this happened. And she'd be like, like, this is something, a familiar experience within that group of people.
What should culturally relevant support look like for someone like you?
Like, the representation is so important. I'm not going to lie. I don't think I would feel as comfortable. Like, if I had to take a time machine, go back to that situation, and they gave me a different counselor or therapist, and they didn't look like me, whether they looked like me or didn't have the same cultural experience, I don't think I would have been able to talk about a lot of the things that I spoke about. And I don't think I would have been able to get the help that I really needed. So I would say, like, out of all things, like, that is one of the most important things. And I know a lot of people, they struggle with even the concept of reaching out to get help because they don't really want to talk to somebody who doesn't know or doesn't, can't understand where I'm coming from. Somebody sitting there, I'm like, oh yeah, I understand that. And you're just looking at them. You're supposed to be fully involved in the situation. They're telling you they understand. You're looking at them like, I know you don't, but let's just go with that. So I would say it is so important, and a lot of people don't understand. And this is no flack for the people who, you know, they went to school to get their degree and they're thinking that they can help you. Me personally, you'd be able to get some of the help you need, but there's a lot of things where you might not feel as vulnerable talking about if you can't feel like either that cultural or just somebody who just looks like you, can they understand me? And sometimes one of the things that I realize is in going through this journey for myself, I realize how much it has helped relatives who I know who probably would have never taken on that journey by themselves. And the difference now where they can self-reflect and be honest about the things that they're feeling rather about, oh, that doesn't bother me. Okay, really? You're talking about it, or you have decided to act differently because of that. So obviously it bothers you. Sit in that emotion and don't worry about what this person has to say or that person has to say. You just experience it for yourself and then you just go from there.
Clara, as someone whose mental health has really been impacted by racial trauma and racism, how important is it for you to have a therapist that truly understands those experiences?
It's very important. Something that I didn't quite realize at first. When I first saw a therapist, I was just happy to be able to see a mental health professional. But then after a few sessions, I was realizing I was saying some things, and the response I would get sometimes would, or maybe I'd speak about a situation where there was a microaggression involved, and the response would almost be like, well, maybe they didn't mean it, or like, how do you know that's what they meant? And I started to realize that there's going to always be that kind of divide there, because as much as they want to help, they aren't in my situation. And many times, even I've had therapists be like, oh, well, you know, you're an adult, so why do you have to listen to your parents? You don't have to really listen to your parents, I guess. And I'm like, I do. And in many cultures, that kind of, even as an adult, you still have to listen to your parents. But a lot of other cultures are not like that. Like, you're an adult, you make your own decisions. So I think having a therapist that is part of your culture or part of, or looks like you, as Shanice was saying, is really important, because there is a line between like unhealthy boundaries and cultural nuances, like, and all these things, just so that you can help them help you. And I think that we get to a point of understanding and help a lot quicker when it's somebody that does understand those things, and they can give you give you tools and solutions to your problems that do take your culture into account, because they understand that. So the way that, you know, I would set boundaries as somebody whose parents, who has to listen to their parents, would be different than somebody who doesn't really have to listen to their parents, and they can just be like, I'm doing what I want because I'm an adult.
One last question for you all. What would you say to listeners who might be experiencing these same things with their mental health as children of immigrants and are looking for guidance and support?
I would say talk to your parents, talk to your grandparents, talk to your uncles, aunts, read on the history of where you came from, read on the history of where you want to go, just get informed, just learn more about yourself. Empathy truly is the path to progress, but you need to learn how to empathize with yourself before anyone else.
Amazing. Shanice, if you want to add to that?
I would say go for it. In like short term. So we spend a lot of time thinking about, you know, what other people are going to think and say and do, or, you know, like I'm dealing with this and I can't seem to get the help that I'm looking for. If you might come across somebody who might say, you know, maybe you should think about talking to somebody, or you have thought about talking to somebody, just do it. Do your research though. See if you can, you know, find somebody who, whether it's culturally, however you resonate with them, I would strongly advise doing it that way, and just see where the journey brings you. I would say be prepared though, is going to be work. So when you leave the first or second day and you feel like this hasn't helped, or I feel worse, keep going, push forward and keep doing it, because it more than likely will probably be one of the best decisions that you made, especially rather than struggling with it by yourself. So I would just say, just go for it.
And Clara, if there's anything to add to that.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to probably speak to the younger generation, because I think that's kind of where I resonate most. Because sometimes you can't talk to your parents, and in Alberta anyway, you can't really see a therapist without your parents' permission. So if your parents are like mine and they didn't want you to, they wouldn't sign off on it. Number one, you are not alone. And two, find your community. Like, the internet's the best place for free information right now. I wish I had like TikTok when I was younger, because there are licensed therapists on there of every race, of every ethnic group, that are sharing information on this stuff. So until you can see a therapist, or maybe if you can't afford a therapist, there are so many online resources of like worksheets and just different things that you can do to help start that healing journey, so that when you are ready and able to see a therapist, you are already on the right track. So
that was Clara Jade, Shanice Coombs, and Alonso Melgar sharing their experiences navigating their mental health as children of immigrants. This project is made possible with the Community Podcast Initiative and powered by Shaw. Special thanks to associate producer Gabrielle Piska. You can learn more about the Community Podcast Initiative at thepodcaststudio.ca.